You're listening to a new episode of Empathy Always Wins.
Khaled, thank you so much for joining Empathy Always Wins. I was just talking about, it's incredible how, for example, you're in Saudi, I'm in Dubai, like this ecosystem is different than, many other ecosystems where you just walk around the streets and, you bump into someone. But I just want to say thank you so much for really coming on Empathy Always Wins. But before we sort of dive into today's episode, I know a lot about yourself. Our audience might not be very so much familiar with Alguru. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself from your perspective on Alguru and a little bit about how you've gotten to where you've gotten today before we dive into the episode?
Ali, thank you for hosting me. I'm pleased to be here today. In a nutshell, my name is Khaled, born and raised in Saudi my entire life, originally from Lebanon. I've started, my entrepreneurial journey in 2016, back when I was still at university, with no projection to turn a project that I had in my university days into a company or into a startup. Back then, I didn't even understand and know the ABCs of establishing a company. But what I knew was solving a specific niched problem in a small network that I had. And this eventually amplified. And I eventually realized and noticed that this problem that I had in Beirut existed not only, where I was trying to solve it, but also on the wider MENA region. I launched this project in Lebanon, made a few validations, and then we were fortunate enough to be sponsored and hosted by the Saudi ecosystem with one of the prominent accelerator programs. And then from there onwards, we established the company, and that was what marked and what set the official launch of Alguru.
I know you just mentioned right now, we were hosted or like we were taken by an accelerator. Would you recommend accelerators to young people? A lot of young people are like, nah, I don't want to give this equity or nah, I don't want to waste time. And not to say it's wasting time, but that's the perception of right now, do it yourself sort of means. How did the accelerator sort of incubate you? And what are the pros and cons of joining an accelerator?
So it depends. Just for context, the accelerator that we joined, which is Taqaddam by KAUST, one of the leading accelerator programs, not only in Saudi, but also in the region, sponsors startups without taking any equity in return. At least that was the format that they followed back when we were in the batch. I'm not sure if they changed that now. But for instance, they gave us $40,000 in cash, and then there was a follow-on in a competition. They also granted us $100,000, and فعلياً تقدم did not take any equity because they have a social ROI to drive an entrepreneurship in Saudi Arabia, etc. The only mandate was establishing a Saudi company, but that came way later than when we joined the program. To go back to your question, Ali, and very, very briefly, you cannot learn the ABCs of entrepreneurship and launching a startup all alone, without doing readings, without networking, and without actually learning from veterans and people who have skin in the game, right? You cannot do that. It's very difficult. If you decide to do that, that's great. But the momentum and the speed that you will be moving towards is going to be much slower than if you join a university, a library, a source of knowledge that tells you what works and what doesn't, enlightens you on what you need to be doing. So briefly, I believe accelerators have to be a must to validate فعلياً how serious a founder is about his or her startup.
No, I love that. And I think that, the programs such as YC, you have Antler now, you have great accelerators and VCs that are actually investors as well. They just, it's a program that actually makes sure that what you're building is a product that people want. And I think that that's what I love the most about successful accelerators, because their programs are designed to graduate you into someone who can take the right decisions. So absolutely, I love what you've said there. And especially when it comes to different mandates, some take percentages, some don't. I'm very happy that with the way things were, with you, you were able to reach a consensus that made perfect sense. Now, I know that technology, the tech industry is one of the most competitive industries. What would be an advice that you would like to give someone who is looking to enter as a founder? What didn't you know that you would love to give an advice to your previous self entering this ecosystem?
That's a very good question. I'd want to summarize my answers or my answer in two parts. Number one, stay as humble as possible. And it's very easy to say this, but it's very, very difficult to actually implement it. As a founder, you got to start off with, you know, the 100 hats formula, right? You got to wear the hat of a social media manager, a product manager, a content creator, a fundraiser, all of that, right? How do you balance all of this with your already existing busy life and stay as humble as possible to serve the customers, to respond to your talents or to your employees' requests, to understand your investors' needs, right? And to put in a bold vision. All of that really, really requires you to stay as down to earth as possible and not wear the the arrogant founder's hat by faking or acting as if you understand everything and you know everything, right? I'm not saying that I wasn't humble in my day one, but I thought that I had it all, right? Khalas, I watched some videos on YouTube on how to launch a company. I read a book or two, and I thought I have all the answers that I needed. Turns out, no, I still lack a lot of knowledge up until this date. And I'm humble enough to say this, right? I'm humble enough to say that I'm still making mistakes and I'm still learning by the day. So this is number one. And number two, definite advice I would give to myself and to other entrepreneurs or people who want to join this ecosystem is read as much as you can. Like, I cannot stress on how important it is for you to read and prepare yourself and armor yourself with enough references and resources before launching a venture. Why is that? Because as Reid Hoffman describes it, starting a business is like jumping off a cliff and then building an airplane while jumping off that cliff, right? It's that fast. It's crazy. If you cannot do both things together unless you have the luxury of time and money. And in most cases, entrepreneurs don't have neither the luxury of time nor money, right? So how can you bootstrap and how can you build for impact and for success with those limitations that you have? My belief and assumption is that you really can do that if you power yourself enough and, as I said, fuel yourself enough and armor yourself enough with the corresponding readings, books, articles, case studies, videos. You have a bunch of those, right? Cover that, cover the ABCs, cover the basics, and then, you know, pull your sleeves and jump right into it.
Is there like one case study or one book that you said, like, you know, for me, 0 to 1, for example, by Peter Thiel was a groundbreaking one. And for me, Blitz Scaling by Reid Hoffman was just incredible. Is there one that, you know, stands out to you, especially even if it's contextual for El Guru?
Yeah. So Blitz Scaling is amazing. But for junior entrepreneurs listening to this, don't read it on your day zero. Please not. It's too early for that. Zero to One is a great book that I must read it. You can finish it in like 1 hour or 2 hours. It's such a small book. But a book that I've read 3 times during my first year, because it literally covers everything, is Lean Startup by Eric Ries. This was described as the Bible of startups by many magazines and journals in the States, but it literally covers everything you must learn before launching a venture, right? And then from there, you can expand on the different philosophies that Eric talks about by reading other articles, right? So the lean methodologies, the build, measure, learn framework, how to start your team, etc. All of those can expand to other books and other topics, but at least you get the foundations from that book.
Yeah. I think that what you're saying is incredibly important. I think a lot of young people just jump into it. The excitement, of course, you know, I know it's, you know, even if the 99% risk of failure, the 1% adrenaline gets the best of us. But this is incredible, important information. And I think advice for all the founders listening to us and youth listening to us. I know that, you know, there are other tutoring platforms in the arena, but what have you found that is the it or is the value prop for Alguru? And how can, for example, our listeners get their hands or familiar with Alguru?
So for us, we understand that the landscape is somewhat crowded. I wouldn't say very crowded, like the fintech space, for example. But the private tutoring vertical under the edtech landscape is somewhat crowded. We have, I think, about 10 to 15 players at most in the region that are focusing on private one-on-one tutoring. For us, there's a few things that truly differentiate Alguru from others. And it's something that came along as we were establishing and aggregating and developing our solution. Number one is the operations and the flow, right? Today, customers can get matched with excellent, affordable, convenient tutors in less than 24 hours. And I know it's going to be very difficult for you to comprehend the flow now, but the supply chain of the private tutoring industry is really, really, really complex. Like it's audacious, complex because, you know, you have a diverse pool of subjects, you have a diverse pool of tutor profiles, etc. I'm not going to go into that. But the operational excellence is definitely one thing, right? Number two is the customer experience all in all. So the product itself, from the minute you submit an interest till the minute you receive that session specifically, also the flow that we have is absolutely seamless for parents specifically more than students, because that's our main target audience. And number three, and this is more theoretical than practical, but it's the foundations that we've set in this company, from culture, from talents, from vibes, from roadmap, from vision, from all of that. They represent a very strong, bold, significant pillar in the essence of this company. I'm talking about the intangible things, right? And the commitment and dedication that we have from each and every talented owner or employee in our company, as they, you know, enact as founding members of this company, is truly what drives us to be as bold as possible with this vision, because we know we can do a lot with those people in the coming future. So those are the three, you know, the three core differentiators, as mentioned.
I love how you mentioned owner, because I think the thing that makes, you know, the startups, you know, here and in the West and everywhere in the world super successful is people feeling like they own it. And not just on paper or not just because of an ESOP or a stock option or whatever. No, they actually feel like they are heard and seen. And this ties into my next sort of question as a leader. You know, this show, Empathy Always Wins, is about leadership and emotional intelligence and mental health. How do you lead your team in a manner that makes people feel like they are seen and heard and attended to?
So we give them enough tools to feel empowered and not hypothetically empowered. We don't go to them and tell them, hey guys, you're empowered, and expect them to feel empowered. No, we try to do a bunch of things to truly word out and put into effect what we mean when we talk about empowerment. So we recently introduced our values, the first version of our company values. One of those values is we stride as talented owners, right? So this might seem hypothetical to you, right? And we stride as talented owners, but how are you actually doing that? So when you link that and associate it with the flat structure that we have, non-bureaucratic flat structure that we have, where you are actually empowered to make mistakes more than empowered to have successes, right? And when you know that we have a culture and an environment that is flexible enough and agile enough to give you what you need to thrive for success, right? Then and only then will you actually feel that level of empowerment. It's going to be very difficult for you to see that or touch that or witness that in the first few weeks with us at the company. But a month from there, 2 months from there, you will notice that this is the general flow and the general vibe that we give you as part of our DNA. And, you know, from there onwards, that's the flow that you will follow. And that's the flow that you will instill within your mindset and mentality.
I think, when I come to think of today's landscape, I think there are a few major challenges, Khaled. What would you say is the prominent challenge in today's ecosystem that you are actively tackling? Is it hybrid work models? Is it motivation and, you know, this recession that we're going through? Like, as a leader, there's something that probably is a challenge in front of you that you're actively and proactively actually working towards. What is that and how are you doing it?
So the number one challenge is finding talents. I humbly believe that this is the challenge that all of us, all of the startups in the ecosystem equally face. I might talk to you about fundraising. I might talk to you about other things. But fairly, and the one thing that highlights a common challenge or problem to the wider ecosystem is finding enough talents. Why is that? Because Ali, if you go back a few years back, the startup ecosystem, the tech ecosystem, this tech industry did not exist. We had players, definitely. We had mammoths and excellent players like Kareem and others that were launched in the early 2010s. But that was not not the common thing to do, right? Now it's very common to come across startups and whatnot. So with that, there's a big responsibility to educate the wider ecosystem on the startups, right? So for example, when we find someone who is knowledgeable enough of startups naivety, is knowledgeable enough of the problems, the limitations, the gaps that startups have, right? And we try to figure out the best formula, we try to figure out what will incentivize this person to join us. And usually these people are not easy to catch, right? Because if you find yourself an A-class talent, he or she is probably receiving multiple offers, etc. So finding talents is definitely one of the most challenging things that we are proactively, reactively, and actively trying to find ways to tackle it.
And I want to really help you. So I think anyone listening to the show, anyone that does think that they belong to this, that they are an A-class talent, I'll ask you to send me shortly after, a link where, your hirees can, join Al Guru. And I would love to, help support. I think this is a very big challenge. Not a lot of our youth are aslan exposed to entrepreneurship at a younger age, whereas the West are. So they're familiar. Maybe they have a cousin, a relative. We're still not there yet, and I understand that this is a culture that we're building together, and I think we have a responsibility to do that together. Khaled, I just want to say thank you. But before we wrap up today, I just have two questions, and this is a fire sort of a. I got inspired by Harry Stebbings. I'm not sure if you listen to the 20VC podcast. It's one of the best startup podcasts for founders and investors out there. So Harry, shout out to you. He is a 25-year-old, $150 million fund investor and a podcaster as well. He is incredible, wow. Incredible. All of the biggest VC from Benchmark to Sequoia to the chief marketing, chief growth officer of Hotspot, Airbnb, everyone's on the show. They give out so much. So this is a perfect show to actually marry with Empathy Always Wins with regards to entrepreneurship and leadership. But Harry always asks this one question to people who come on the show that are very inspiring. What's one piece of advice that you would give your 14-year-old self?
My 14-year-old self. We are living in a very fast-paced world, right? Our generation is struggling with this fast-paced world to the extent that it impacts our employment, it impacts our motivation, it impacts our ability to move fast enough, right? One piece of advice I would give my 14-year-old self is find the formula, the ideal formula that would keep you continuously asking for hunger and for, you know, enough thirst to never be sufficed. I'd also want to use the example of Reid Hoffman in this just very quickly. He was once asked on his thoughts about how efficiently and how effectively is Reid Hoffman using his personal time on a daily basis. And you would imagine a guy like him to give an easy 150% answer because he sits on multiple successful boards. He has co-founded two of the largest companies in the world, PayPal and LinkedIn. And he's a philanthropist, multi-billionaire, etc., all of that. And his answer was 60%. I am not utilizing Reid Hoffman in full. I utilize 60% of Reid Hoffman's day. And not only is that very humble of him, right, to say that, but there's a philosophical school in what he said, because a person like him who can literally easily say, you know, I'm successful enough, you know, these are my list of achievements, no, is very aware that he can do much more. And, you know, that's the baseline for him. You know, I'm always hungry. I'm always thirsty enough for more successes. And I did not have that when I was 14 years old. I was too busy with a BlackBerry and with the school and all of that. So, yeah, that's definitely something I would tell myself if I go back 15 years ago.
And the last but final question in this fire round is, what do you do every day to take care of your mental health?
I speak to my fiance. We take care of our mental health by having enough healthy conversations, by doing healthy activities together, and she's my safe haven in that.
I love that. And not a lot of actually men, you know, say this. I think it's so strong for you to say this. I think vulnerability is something that, we live in a generation where we're scared of vulnerability now. And I think that to share this and to have this, you know, to have this touched by someone who you can call a safe haven, it's very special. And so I wish you both all the best. It's been wonderful, Ya Khaled, having you.
Wallahi,
it's been wonderful having you. And this conversation has been incredible. Would you like to leave our audience and our listeners with one final thing to just cover the floor?
Ali, thank you very much again. I was privileged to be on this call. Just in case there's anything I can help with personally from the Saudi ecosystem, from the tech industry, or generally on the startup scene, my title is CEO and tutor. So you can use the latter part, the tutor, and I absolutely love the tutor for no returns whatsoever, as long as you know your ask. So please reach out to me on LinkedIn. I think you're going to share my LinkedIn profile somewhere with this episode. Please don't hesitate. And you know, you'd find me trying to figure out solutions and answers for you, even if I don't personally have them. So thank you for that in advance.
Khaled, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I hope you have an
evening.
Do feel free to share it with your friends. Drop us a rating on Apple. Subscribe to the show. Follow it on Spotify. And we'll see you soon in a new episode of Empathy Always Wins. Take care and have a lovely day, guys.